I noticed that there are some people here tonight that I've not seen before. That means you're probably here for the first time. My name is Christian, and I'm one of the people who's a part of this church, Outreach Red Bank. And usually I get to stand on Sunday nights and teach. Not always. There are other people who preach. But this week I will be preaching. And I want to first of all say thank you for being here. I'm glad that you're here tonight. I also want to catch you up because you've come in the middle of something. We started a series, and usually when I teach, I'll do that. I'll, instead of just having one sermon and then another one that's not connected, we'll have a series where we have a number of sermons in a row. And you've come on a night when we're having our third sermon in a series, and let me tell you what the series is about. A few weeks back, I said to this church that knowing God is a great thing to aim at, that we all ought to aim at knowing Him. If that was our goal in life, our lives would be what they were meant to be. The more we get to know God, the more we know life. Maybe you're here tonight, you don't believe that. Maybe you do believe that. Either way, that's the premise for this series of sermons, that the more we know God, the better we are able to live. And in order to orient our understanding of who God is, I picked one passage from a book called Proverbs. And I'd like you to look at it. So grab a Bible. If you have one already, open it to Proverbs chapter 6. And on these Bibles here, it's on page 513. It's almost right in the middle. So open up to the middle of the Bible, find that page 513. And then in the book of Proverbs, in chapter 6, find your way to verse 16. There are four verses in a row there, and they are going to be our subject for tonight, and they will be for the rest of the sermon. Okay? Look at those words there. They tell us something about who God is. Verse 16, in Proverbs chapter 6, it says, "There are six things that the Lord hates, seven that are an abomination to Him: haughty eyes, a lying tongue, and hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked plans, a feet that hurry to run to evil, a lying witness who testifies falsely, and one who sows discord in a family." There you have it, seven things that are an abomination to the Lord. And we're going to spend a week on each one. And when we do that, we discover things about God that we might not otherwise know, and in so doing, we learn about life. Now, last week, you look at verse 17, the words haughty eyes, that was our subject for last week. If you'd like, you can go on the internet and find that and listen if you missed it. Tonight, we're going to talk about a lying tongue. I want to ask you a question, and I want you to answer this in your mind. And the more honest you are with yourself here, the better for what happens in our time together tonight. Here's my question. Do you remember the moment in your life where you became proficient at lying? By proficient, I mean you became good at it. You were able to lie in such a way that other people didn't know you were lying. Think about that and be totally honest with yourself. You don't have to share that. When did that happen for you? For me, it happened in grade school. Right about the time when I had to do homework. I hated homework. And I found that it was easier to lie about having done my homework or about what happened to my homework after I had done it than to actually do it. And so I started to lie. Anyone else have that same time period of lying? I was sure at that time that it didn't matter at all. It wasn't a big deal. Lying meant nothing. And I was also confident that neither my parents nor my teachers could ever tell. Any teachers in the group here? If you're a teacher, you can always tell, can't you? See, I realized this the year after college when I went to teach at a small school in Philadelphia where the kids lied all the time. I was leading an after-school program one day, and there were two kids in this little program. One was Melissa. She was a third grader. And the other was a kindergartner named Leonard. This is in inner city Philly. I was sitting at the table, and they were doing their worksheets. I noticed, when I looked up, that Leonard was looking out the window. He wasn't looking at his worksheet. Melissa was looking at her worksheet, but she was doodling. I watched him. You know, he started scratching his ear as he stared out the window, digging in his nose a little. It was like a few minutes of this, so I said, "Excuse me, students, are you done with your worksheets?" What do you think Leonard said? Yes. He didn't even stop. Yes. Now, at this point, Melissa, who was over here, she stood up from her seat, and she looked over at his paper, and she saw that it was blank. And this is what she said. She went like this. Ooh, Leonard is a liar. I looked. She stood up. She walked over to his desk. She put her hands down on his desk like this. Now, she's a third grader. She made herself as tall as she could. Leonard's cowering, looking up at her. She says this. Do you know what God does to liars? She's looking right at him. This is pretty serious. She says, he's going to throw you in his lake of fire, and his angels are going to watch you burn forever. She turned around, looked at me like this. And she went and sat down. Do you know, Leonard burst into tears and started to cry hysterically. I almost started to cry. Now, I want to say what it says here again. Listen. One of the things which is an abomination to the Lord. Abomination means it's an object of disgust and hatred. It's a lying tongue. Now, I'm certain that Melissa had an oversimplified and overdramatized picture of what God does when someone lies about a worksheet. I'm sure she does. God's not like that. But if we go to the scriptures, if we open this book and look at it, and seek to find out what exactly is God's attitude toward a tongue which lies, what is it about a tongue that would make it so that to use it in the wrong way would be such a terrible thing? Do you know what we find here? We find image after image that shows us that we always underestimate the power of the tongue, and we never take a lie seriously enough. It's not what Melissa said, no, but it is true that the lying tongue is a weapon that's more dangerous than we almost ever recognize. Listen to some of the images that Scripture uses for a tongue. It calls a tongue a sword, a sharp razor, a deadly arrow, a war club. That sounds pretty dangerous, doesn't it? Maybe you, like I, when you were a child, learned that rhyme. Sticks and stones can break my bones, but words will never hurt me. Do you know that in Proverbs it says, the soft tongue can break bones? Anyone in here ever had a word hit them so hard it was like their bones were getting broken? Yeah. That little jingle that we learned in the nursery, when we learned on the playground in school, is a lie. Words can hurt. King Solomon, the wisest man in the scriptures, he says that in the tongue is the power of death, that the tongue can kill. It's a deadly weapon. This is what I want to do tonight. I want to seek together to learn why it is that God would hate a lying tongue. What is it about a lying tongue that makes it so that it's something that God hates? The way we'll do that is to examine this fact that lies are dynamic. Do you know what I mean by dynamic? Dynamic means it has a progress through time. It has motion as things progress. We sometimes think of lies as this thing that happens just once. They're not like that. They spread out. We're going to look at the dynamics of a lie and do that to try to understand what is it about lying tongues that the Lord hates. And in doing that, I believe we'll find out some things about God that will be helpful for us in our search of understanding Him. And our approach tonight to understanding what it is that a lie is like is going to be to look at a letter all the way at the other end of the Bible, written by a man named James. And so I want you to turn to it, and we're going to look at that together. We're just going to spend some time on three images that James uses in his letter. Flip almost all the way to the back and find the third chapter of that tiny little letter called James. And it's on page 981. In the third chapter of his letter, here's what James does. He gives three pictures that show this. They show us something about who we are. They show us something about what our tongue is like, and then they show us something about how our tongue can really have a major impact on us as people. Okay? Let's read together in chapter 3, starting at the beginning of that. Verse 1 reads like this. Not many of you should become teachers, my brothers and sisters, for you know that we who teach will be judged with greater strictness. Incidentally, this line right here is really directed by James at people who are in a position kind of like I am, who will stand up and presume to teach people about who God is. And now there are others in this room tonight who also have roles of standing up and teaching. Those of you who lead in either our middle school, high school, young adult groups, insofar as you stand up and teach people about who God is in your groups during the week, this is for you especially. There are others who lead Bible studies in here, Midweek Oasis and an adult ministry, and others who lead small groups. For us especially who stand up and speak, James is saying here, be careful, because when you begin to speak about God, it matters a lot, and you'll be judged harshly. He goes on to write this in verse 2. For all of us make many mistakes. Anyone who makes no mistakes in speaking is perfect, able to keep the whole body in check with a bridle. He's simply saying, when we talk, we make mistakes, and when we teach, we should be on our lookout even more so. Now, for those of you who are here tonight who aren't going to teach or stand up or talk to people about God, if you think what comes next doesn't have to do with you, let me just tell you. After saying this is something especially for teachers, James goes on to give three images of what you are like, whether you teach or not, in relation to your tongue. So for us who teach, we should listen especially. But for those of us who don't, you are going to hear something that James says about yourself and your tongue. And there's three images. Let's look at them together. Verse 3. If we put bits into the mouths of horses to make them obey us, we guide their whole bodies. Or, look at ships. Though they are so large that it takes strong winds to drive them, yet they are guided by a very small rudder, wherever the will of the pilot directs. So also the tongue is a small member, yet it boasts of great exploits. How great a forest is set ablaze by a small fire, and the tongue is a fire. The tongue is placed among our members as a world of iniquity. It stains the whole body, sets on fire the cycle of nature, and is itself set on fire by hell. Okay, we've got three images there. We're going to take a closer look at each one in turn. The first image was the image of a horse and a bit. The second image was the image of a ship and a rudder. And then the third is the image of a forest and a fire. James starts out by telling us that we are a horse. You are a horse. How do you like that? Okay. All right, horse face. Betty, would you put the first slide up? In case you're not familiar with what a horse is, look at this. Here it comes. There it is. Okay. Now, this is a horse. This is the horse's head. At the time of the writing of this letter, there was no such thing as recreational sort of riding about on horses. Neither were horses used for agriculture. If you wanted a field plowed or something moved along, you would use a donkey or a mule, not a horse. The horse served one purpose in these days. Anybody know what that is? What is that? Not transportation. They used camels, or they would use a mule or a donkey for that. The horses were extraordinarily expensive and highly valued for one purpose. Go ahead and hit the next slide. They were valuable because they were used in battle. The horse was a terrible animal to its enemies because it was strong and fast. It could pull a chariot with a warrior on it, and if your army had a horse or horses in it, you could dominate the enemy because you could move quickly and with power and with resolve. When you wanted to go into battle and you had to fight a group of people that were on foot, you could just trample them down because you had horses. And that's what a horse would have symbolized to all of the people who received this letter. And what James is saying to them is this: you are a horse, and your tongue is, now I'm going to use a laser pointer here, is the bit. Now, would you scoot back one, Betty? Press the oh, that. This little piece right here is called the bit. And what it is a small rod that is made of metal that goes between the in the mouth of the horse. And it's a tiny little piece of metal in the mouth of this enormous, powerful animal. And a horse in battle is only useful if one thing is true. And do you know what that is? It's if the bit is used in the right way. Now go ahead and scoot to the next picture again. Look at this. This horse will be effective in the fights which it must fight only when the bit here guides it properly into battle. If it doesn't have a bit in its mouth, or if the bit in its mouth is used in the wrong way, the horse will be utterly useless when it comes to the fights against the enemies which it must fight. Now, I want you to think of yourselves for a moment. Every one of you, you must understand that the scriptures mean for you to think about yourself in a certain way here, and it's this, that you, in this world in which you are placed, you are meant to engage in certain battles. And God has made it so that you are a powerful force, potentially, against many evils and enemies of this world's good. Let me ask you for a moment. Can you think of some of the things in this world that are bad, that God would want you to fight up against, to stand up against, and to go into battle against? Maybe there are lies that are pervasive in our culture that keep certain people from living life to at all and push them down all the way. Maybe there are cultural messages that are ruining the lives of some of your friends because they believe them, and you need to go fight against them. Or maybe it's some disbelief, or it's some utter anxiety that overwhelms somebody you know because they don't know the truth about life. And this is something that you were made to go up against as if you were a warrior and fight against in battle. And do you know that you will only be as effective in this battle as you will so long as the bit is used in the right way? And the bit is your tongue. And you will find yourself as a person facing battles in this world where you will either open your mouth and say the truth, or keep it silent, or open your mouth and say the wrong thing. You are a horse that was made to fight the evil and injustice and wickedness in this world, and you will do that when you open your mouth and say the truth. And if you keep silent or say a lie, you will be as useless as a horse in battle without a bit in its mouth. All right, let's look at the second image. The next image was the image of a ship. That is a line drawing of what an ancient ship would look like. It's hard to see the detail, but before you skip ahead, let me talk a little bit about the ship. James writes in his letter, he says, or look at ships. He wanted the people who were getting this letter to think about ships. Look at ships. This is what he says to them. Though they are so large that it takes strong winds to drive them, yet they are guided by a very small rudder wherever the will of the pilot directs. Would you skip to the next picture? This is not an ancient ship. This is pretty old. But just to give you a sense, if you don't know what a rudder is, this is the ship. It's obviously quite large. And the rudder, see this little piece right back here? This is the rudder. It goes down into the water maybe about that far. This enormous ship is driven by the wind. But where it goes depends entirely upon one thing. This. Now, let me tell you a bit about what ancient people who received this letter would have thought of when they thought of a ship. You or I might think of either a small boat that we might go out fishing on. That's a boat, not a ship. So the word that James uses here is not for the sort of boats that Jesus and his friends would have gone fishing on. It was much more for the sort of ship that would go across the ocean. And ships in those days were not something that any Israelites were comfortable with. Can you think of stories in the Bible where there are boats? There's really two of them that are popular. The one with Jonah, right? And the one with Noah. Both scary, aren't they? Right? The Israelites were not seafaring people. They liked to stay on land. And so when James, in his letter, brings up the image of a ship and asks all the people to look at a ship, do you know one of the things that would have happened to all of them? They would have been afraid. And the reason they were afraid is that they were scared of the ocean. They believed that there were monsters in it. And they all knew that the shipping lanes for delivering goods from one place to another in that sea where they would have sailed, they were very dangerous. There were rocks underwater that they could easily scrape up against and the whole ship could be wrecked. In the New Testament, when we read about ships, we read about shipwrecks. And so the image of a ship was scary. This is why. Because the ship was dangerous, it had to travel over treacherous waters where there were obstacles beneath that could easily cause shipwreck. That's one thing they would have thought of, and here's the second. The ship was used to deliver precious cargo. Traveling on land in those areas was difficult. There were mountains, there were valleys, there were bandits. If you really wanted to get something to another port, another place, you would go by sea and bring it across the waters to the port where you could unload your precious cargo in that way. And so the ship would signify for them something frightening and also something that had a job to do, which was to deliver some goods. Now, I want you to think about yourself for a moment. James is saying, you are a ship. Any of you experience life sort of like a journey that sometimes is scary because there's dangerous rocks beneath the water? Have you ever experienced life like that? It's hard sometimes. There's frightening things that you must go through. On this journey of life, there are times when waters become stormy and treacherous and you become afraid. Am I right? Maybe some of you are in the midst of a storm like that now. When that happens, the thing that will get the ship through the storm is the rudder, right? Let me ask you this. When you get in a difficult place in life, is there ever a time when you're more tempted than that to tell a lie? I know that one of the reasons we lie is because we believe that it will keep us from running into trouble. Or it will make things easier for us. If we just create reality in this way by telling a lie, then things will be easier. And the way we try to avoid the rocks that hover beneath the water in our lives is by recreating reality with our words and telling a lie. Anybody else in here do that? Listen, you are a ship, and the tongue that is in your mouth is the rudder. It's that little part of your body, and it steers the whole thing. And I'll tell you this, if you use the rudder in the wrong way, you will actually not avoid the rocks. You will crash upon them. I can tell you from my own experience, every time I tried to shape my future by telling a lie, it was disastrous for me. Maybe not immediately, but always it has been. And that's because lies are not good for you. They don't actually keep you from crashing on the rocks. They make it so you do. Maybe you will tell a lie to get yourself in a relationship with someone who wouldn't like the real you. If you do that, shipwreck. Maybe you will tell a lie to present yourself as a different person than you are so that you can get a job that you wouldn't otherwise get. If you get that job, it's going to be a shipwreck for you and the company that you work for. Maybe you are deep down inside, you know that you failed as a person. You're in this room tonight and you're thinking, I know that I've sinned and I'm a rotten person in some way, and I'm going to pretend that I'm not as messed up as I am around all the people in this church so that they'll accept me, because if I show them how rotten I am, they won't. Do you know what? If you do that, it will make your life like a constant storm, a never-ending shipwreck, and you'll never receive any love or acceptance whatsoever because you'll always be fake. The lying tongue will make you wreck on the rocks. One other thing about the ship. I said that the ship has a precious cargo to deliver. Always. Do you know that James means for you to understand yourself as a ship, not just because you have to go through life where there'll be hard times, but also because you have been sent out into this world with some precious cargo to deliver. Every single one of you has. Every one of you has been made to sail into this world and deliver something wonderful in it. And I know this because I'm sure that God has given every one of us a gift to deliver into this world. And if we are not willing to tell the truth with our tongues, we will never, ever deliver that precious thing that God means for each one of us to deliver in this world of His. The world is desperate for the good news of the gospel. And the way it gets delivered is when ships like us use our rudders in the right way and speak the truth into the world. And so you will find yourself in a situation where someone doesn't believe that they're worth anything. But you know that the gospel says that they are, and you can either open your mouth and say it or not. You will find yourself in a situation where someone's suffering because they believe that their body doesn't look like it has to look for them to be valuable, and they'll starve themselves and hurt themselves to make themselves look like they think they need to. And you can open your mouth and tell them the truth that God loves them as they are. And there are an infinite number of ways where you can open your mouth in this world and deliver the goods like a good ship. All right, one last image. Let's get to the last one, Betty. The third image was the image of a forest. Look at that picture there. It's nice, isn't it? Does it make you kind of want to go, oh. Yeah. the land in and around Jerusalem is pretty arid. There's a rift valley where it's like 100 million degrees and it's dry. It rains once every 3 billion years. This is hyperbole. It doesn't rain a lot. It's dry. However, there are forests in and around that region in the mountains. And for the recipients of this letter, the forest would have symbolized really two things: life and value. Life, because it was clear that in the forest there were thousands of living creatures who made their homes. And life, because they knew that the forest was a living entity. It was a growing thing. It was a creature. In their minds, it was something that God had created that was alive. And it symbolized for them this abundant, lush, growing life. That was on the one hand. On the other hand, because of the trees in the forest, which were very useful for lumber and for building, it also represented value. Because they knew that if they used the wood from the forest, they could build homes, they could make ships, they could trade. It was a living, growing thing that was highly valuable. And James wants you to understand that you are a forest. All of the people around you are forests. I want you to look around at all these forests. Go ahead. Now, the forest is alive and valuable. It is also vulnerable. Let's see the next slide. It is vulnerable to fire. And when it catches on fire, this is what happens. Go to the next slide, Betty. This is what it looks like after a fire has torn through a forest. Now, this is stark. It's stark, that image. It's not stark enough in terms of what James means to teach us here with this last image. I'll tell you why. Listen again. You, all of you, are living and you're valuable. I have worked, I think it's been maybe 15 years I've worked with high school students. I've known thousands of high school students. Do you know what the most destructive thing that I've seen in the lives of high school students, the ones who are really having a hard time, what the most destructive thing in their lives has always been, in my observation? The cruel words of an adult early on in their lives. James says the tongue is a fire. I can think of a dozen young people who are depressed and they're full of anguish and anxiety, who are lost, who hate themselves because they have taken the words of a cruel parent into their hearts and then turned those words into their own words back on themselves. I don't mean difficult things that parents must say to their children. All parents have to say things to their children that they don't want to hear. We have to do that as parents. I mean cruel and destructive things. Phrases like, you are worthless. You never do anything right. I wish you were never born. Those words, and I'll tell you, there are adults in this room who have taken words like that into their hearts from their own parents or from adults in their lives from when they were young. Those words are flames that utterly destroy a person's spirit and soul, just like a fire tears through a forest and rips it to shreds. And every time, every single time, any one of us, not just parents towards children, but peers, when you turn to someone in your social circle and say something cruel to them and biting and vicious, when you open your mouth to speak something that is simply destructive, every time you do that, it's a lie. And the reason I know that is because I know that every single person was created in God's image. And therefore, no one is worthless. And anything that is simply cruel and destructive must therefore have to necessarily be a lie. And so every time any one of us opens our mouths to speak some cruelty to another person, it's a lie. And what it does is it destroys their spirit and soul just like a fire destroys a forest. Listen now. The tongue is like a bit in the mouth of a horse. Jared, would you get the lights? The tongue is like a bit in the mouth of a horse. The horse is meant to go into battle to fight the enemy, injustice, and unrighteousness in the world. And that horse will be utterly useless if the bit is not used in the right way. The tongue is like the rudder on the ship. The ship will never make it to its destination and will never avoid the rocks so long as the rudder doesn't steer it in the right direction. The tongue is a fire and life is a forest, and the tongue, when used wrong, can utterly devour a forest. Now listen to me right now. I want to ask you to be honest with yourself again. Where in your life right now are you lying? Every one of you, think about this. Are there battles that you should be fighting and speaking out against, which either you're not, you're just keeping silent, and that's a lie of omission, or you're saying the untrue thing in the face of the lies that you were meant to fight? Or are you in life avoiding treacherous waters or danger by telling a lie rather than the truth? Or are you, in the ways you interact with the people around you, using your tongue, lashing out at others like a flame in a forest? God hates the lying tongue. Now let me tell you why he hates it. He hates the lying tongue because in this world that is so full of wickedness, he has given the task of speaking the truth into those situations to people like us. And he hates the lying tongue because it makes it so all of the potential that we have to undo the wickedness in the world and the evil comes to nothing, like a horse with no bit. And insofar as God hates injustice and wickedness and unrighteousness in the world, he hates the tongue that will not speak out against it. God hates the lying tongue because he hates wickedness and because he loves justice. And because God wants every one of us to live in justice, he hates the lying tongue. God hates the lying tongue because he does not want you to be wrecked like a ship on the rocks. He looks at you and he wants your life to be good. He wants you to have a life that is not characterized by misery and shipwreck. And because the lying tongue leads to that, he hates it. And God looks at the world full of plants like us, forests like you and I, and all of the people around that he needs to grow and live. And he hates the lying tongue because the tongue kills the forest like flames. He hates it. God hates the lying tongue because he loves the people that he's made so much. Now what shall we do? What can we do to change this? I could say to you tonight, just go and try harder to keep your tongue under control. And if I did that, and anyone in here read beyond where I stopped, I would be in big trouble. Because it says anyone who teaches must be careful. I can't leave out verse 7. Look at verse 7. Those first images were images that were comparing. This is an image of contrasting. Every species of beast and bird, of reptile and sea creature can be tamed and has been tamed by the human species. But no one can tame the tongue, a restless evil full of deadly poison. No one can tame the tongue. All right. That would be like me saying, all right, you will never stop lying. Good night. It's true that no one can tame the tongue. There is one who wasn't the recipient of this letter. There's one who can, and it's God. We learn this in the scriptures, that God can tame the tongue. Here's the first thing that you should do. It's this. Go to God. Go to God and say to him, God, keep watch over my tongue. I know some of you take notes. I want you to write this verse down. This is for you. This is just from me to you. All right? If you're not a note taker, this isn't for you. Psalm 141, verse 3. This is what it says in that psalm. It's so simple. The psalmist says, set a guard over my mouth, O Lord. Keep watch over the door of my lips. The psalmist knows that he can't keep his mouth under control. So what he does is he says, God, would you please put a little guard there and set a watch over my lips? Because I know I'm prone to misuse them. Psalm 141, 3. Here's the second thing, okay? The first thing is go to God. Okay, let's keep reading in James one more time here. In 8 he says, no one can tame the tongue. In verse 9 he says, with it we bless the Lord and Father, and with it we curse those who are made in the likeness of God. From the same mouth come curse, blessing and cursing. My brothers and sisters, this ought not to be so. Does a spring pour forth from the same opening both fresh and brackish water? The answer, of course, is no. Can a fig tree, my brothers and sisters, yield olives, or grapevine figs? The answer again is no. No more can salt water yield fresh. Here's what he's saying. He's saying, as long as the water in the well is poison, it will only give poison water. If the tree grows figs, don't expect it to have grapes on it. And every one of us who has a tongue that is prone to lying, it points to a heart that is not quite right. And so, go to God is the first thing I have to tell you tonight. And the second thing is this. When you go to Him, say, God, change my heart. In Proverbs, we learn that out of the overflow of the heart, the words come. You can actually pray to God, God, change my heart. Psalm 51, for you note takers, is a great psalm here. This is a psalm of confession where David asks for a pure heart to be cleansed from within. And if you are finding that your words are poison, then go to God and say, God, would you clean this heart up of mine? It's a mess. And incidentally, if you feel like running away from God and hiding, don't. He'll be so glad if you come to Him, and then He'll cleanse your heart. That's the second thing. Two more things. The third thing, after you've gone to God and asked for this new heart, this is the third thing. It's very simple. Shut up. Shut up. Just shut up. It says all over the place in Proverbs things like this. Even the fool is considered wise when he keeps his mouth shut. Where there is no lack of words, there's no lack of transgression. With many words comes many sins. This makes me sweat. I talk a lot. There are so many times where we open our mouths when we don't need to. So just shut up. All right, that's number three. And number four.
This is the best one by far. And that's why I left it for last.
God hates a lying tongue, but He loves a tongue that tells the truth. And if you want to grow away from being a person whose tongue tells lies, practice telling the truth. And let me tell you.
Let me tell you the truth.
The truth is that God loves you more than you could ever know. This is me being a ship, ready, delivering the message. You think that God doesn't know how wretched you are. He knows. You think God could never love you. You're absolutely wrong. You think that you're the only person who's got a hard thing going in your life. You're wrong. Everybody's got it hard. You think that maybe, just maybe, if you engineered the rest of your life in the right way, God would come to think you were worthwhile. Not so. He already thinks you're more worthwhile than you could ever imagine. He loves you so much that not only would He do anything, He did everything already to give you the love that you were made for. He did that when He looked down from His seat on heaven and said, I can't bear to see my son or daughter, and that's you, alone, without my presence. And so He left His throne in heaven above, and He didn't consider it too low or mean a thing to be born of a peasant woman in a humble stable. And He took His place beside the beasts, among the fodder of the animals, in a crooked crib. And He was born, and He was pursued, and He was seen as nothing at all in His life. All of the religious establishment rejected Him. He was mocked, beaten, and His life ended in rejection and sorrow and loneliness. All for one thing. For you. Because He loves you that much. And that's the truth. And I say that to you tonight. And in so doing, I practice opening my mouth and saying the truth. You might not say the truth in that way. Maybe you're not a preacher. But if you want to learn to tame your tongue after you've asked God to cleanse you of your guilty heart and give you the right thing to say, then learn the truth and say it to each other. This is what that means. When you leave tonight and you're spending time with each other after church at dinner, instead of just doing small talk, change the conversation by saying something true like this. I have seen God at work in my life in the following ways, and I want to tell you about it. Or maybe there's somebody who's not there, who's usually in your group of friends, and instead of opening your mouth to say something bad about them because they're not there, how about telling a story about them that makes them look better than they've ever looked while they're not there? You know you can do that? How about this? Go to somebody who you know thinks less of themselves than they ought to. Right when I'm done speaking, walk up to them and say, hey, I don't know if you've ever heard this, but I think you're really great. I see in you God's image. You can do that with your mouth. You can open your mouth to give people grace. Okay, this is your last verse for you note takers. Write this one down. Ephesians 4:29, where Paul writes, let no evil talk come out of your mouths, but only what is useful for building up as there is need, so that your words may give grace to those who hear. God hates a lying tongue. Because he loves the truth and what it does when it plants itself among His people and begins to grow. And if we as a group, if this group here, and those of you who are visiting will go away to another church, if you go back to your church, and if you will ask God to give you a guard on your lips and a new heart from which you can speak the truth, and you go into the places where you go and you begin to speak the truth, you will be like a fire, but not one that's destructive, one that's warming and that brings light and that pleases God. Let's pray that God would give all of us the power to do that wherever He places us, and then we'll sing some more together. Let's pray.